The Cambridgeshire Football Show on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Hello, good afternoon, and welcome to another Cambridgeshire Football Show here on Cambridge 105 Radio, live from Gwydir Street and perfectly social distance as well. No match for the Ewes this afternoon as they were knocked out of the FA Cup earlier in the month by Shrewsbury. However, they are probably grateful for the rest. One man who won't be getting a rest today, though, is Chief Executive Ian Mather. He'll be joining us live this hour to discuss the brilliant news that fans are permitted back into football stadiums. Yes, the Ewes won't just be welcoming Mansfield to the Abbey on Wednesday night, but 2,000 and supporters hopefully as well. Tim Armitage is also in the studio too. We'll also hear from Charlotte Crisp, who is Head of Youth Development at Cambridge United. She tells us all about the girls' pathway that feeds into the Ewes women's team, which she is also a part of. As ever, we'll keep you across the lunchtime kickoff in the Premier League. This week it's between Brighton, Hove Albion and Liverpool, currently 0-0 with half an hour gone so far. So welcome along to the Cambridgeshire Football Show. I'm Ollie Slack. We are live. If you want to get in touch, you can do 07919 070 490. That's the number to text. You can email us sport@cambridge105.co.uk or in the studio, email studio@cambridge105.co.uk or on social media at 105 Sport, Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. You can get your questions to Cambridge United Chief Executive Ian Mather. And that is where we're going to start today. Of course, the fantastic news, as I said, that fans are allowed back into the stadiums across the country. And hopefully on Wednesday, when the Ewes take on Mansfield, we'll have 2,000, well, Amber Army faithful cheering them on. I'm delighted to say that Chief Executive Ian Mather joins us now on the line. Ian, thank you very much for coming on today's show.
Yeah, I was delighted to be on.
How are you doing?
As
you well?
Say, it's a lot of good. Yeah, I'm very good. Yeah, a good news week.
Yeah, it certainly has, especially after the challenges you faced over the last few months. You must just be delighted, relieved, so happy to at long last be welcoming fans back.
Yeah, we've long been advocates of getting fans back. We did the survey, worked with movement strategies earlier in the summer. We're convinced that it's possible to have fans back in a socially distanced way. And we've shown we can do it before. So, we're glad that finally the government has agreed and we can have fans back.
Has it been weird watching games just with the few directors that have been in, then the press and the empty Abbey?
Yeah, it has been a bit weird. I've been fortunate enough to watch all of their home games, a few of the away ones, and it is just a bit odd. It's those moments when we do something great and we've done quite a lot of things really well this season. A goal goes in and normally you'd expect the place to erupt, and it doesn't. It erupts around me, but generally, there's not enough noise there. So we'll be really pleased on Wednesday next week to have the fans back, and hopefully the team will give them something to cheer about.
We've got a few fans' questions for you, so we're desperate to get to those in just a bit, Ian. But let's just, I guess, dot the R's and cross the T's to start with. Just to explain, so Cambridge have been put into Tier 2, which allows 2,000 or 50% of the ground's attendance into the stadium, whatever is lowest. Now, it's been checked with the Safety Advisory Group as well. That's all OK. So I'm a Cambridge United fan. How do I go about getting a ticket for Wednesday?
Well, firstly, the thing to say is that it didn't really matter whether we were in Tier 1 or Tier 2, because what we refer to as the COVID capacity for the Abbey is around 2,000 people, because we've got the way it's configured and maintaining social distancing within both the seating and the standing areas. So it's about 2,000, whichever tier we're in. In terms of getting a ticket, the season ticket holders have already bought their ticket. Some of them bought them as long ago as April, and they've been waiting a long time. So the allocation first is to season ticket holders. There's 1,535 of them. And then beyond that, we've got some tickets which will be general sale on Monday. It's not actually that minus 2,000, because we do have to accommodate other people within that 2,000 capacity, such as the press, for example, and that consumes quite a number of seats, because the seating allocations worked out on bubbles. I'm getting into a lot of detail here, but the more people you have sitting together, because they're in a family bubble, the better. Unfortunately, the press, none of them are in a family bubble, so they all sit as singles, and that gobs up seats. So we're going to fit in as many fans as we possibly can, and the tickets, as I say, will be on sale Monday morning, online or by the phone, and I suspect they'll go pretty quickly.
Yeah, I suspect they will. And regards to season tickets, it's an e-ticket, isn't it? You won't need your card.
Yeah, the people who have season tickets for seated areas haven't got a plastic card. We haven't sent them out this year. They're going to be sent an e-ticket, and I think quite a lot of them already sent an e-ticket. But if they haven't got one by middle of Monday, then get in touch and we'll sort that out. But the people who are in the standing area, so that Habin and Newmarket Road End, they should have the plastic card. So again, if you haven't got one, do get in touch with us, and that will get you access to the ground.
And in August, Ian, when the 1,000 season tickets went on sale, when the season was restarting, there was this two-stage ticket process. You had to, of course, buy your season ticket, and the second stage was a priority window before games where you had to confirm your attendance and let the club know if you weren't going. Is this still in process, or is it very much different? Is it just letting the club know that you can't attend? Because obviously you want to try and maximise the capacity.
Yeah, yeah. It's slightly different, but essentially, our message is let's not waste a space. So if you're a season ticket holder, you have the right to come along, and it's great to see you. But if for whatever reason you don't want to come, you feel as though you're in a vulnerable group, or you've got possibly symptoms, definitely don't come. But let's not then waste that ticket, and let us know, and we'll reallocate that. You can still watch the game on iFollow. We're checking with EFL, but we're pretty sure that any season ticket holder will be able to watch on iFollow. So let's just not waste a space.
Yeah, of course, that iFollow pass is very important, isn't it? If people don't have a season ticket and for whatever reason they can't get the general sale tickets on Monday, because I'm sure they'll go like gold dust, that iFollow pass is still vitally important for the income of the club.
Absolutely, it is. And it has been really helpful to get iFollow income. It's frankly the only income we've had since we started playing. So it really is helpful that people do buy the passes. And as a club, we're doing pretty well in the iFollow league table. We're generally in the top five, sometimes in the top three for fans buying iFollow. So we're really grateful for that.
I guess, Ian, one of the things you talked about earlier on this week was the fact that one of the problems we have with letting people back into the ground when it's only 2,000 is that we make a loss in terms of the revenue we bring in. How long is that sustainable, that loss?
That's a really great question, and it sort of brings into play, I did an interview with Sky Sports News yesterday. The point I made there is that people may think, well, fans back in stadium, well, that's job done. The finances are sorted. As you just pointed out, it actually makes the situation worse. If we're playing with no fans, then there's relatively low cost of opening the stadium. Once we let fans in, we have to have quite a high ratio of stewards. It's roughly one steward per 22 people. So it's really quite a high cost. And then we have things like Portaloos we have to hire in. So the costs go up there's not that much revenue because the season ticket holders have already paid for their tickets so that we're not going to get any extra revenue from them, which is quite right. And so it's only those tickets that go on open sale on Monday that generate any income.
Sorry, I guess the follow-on from that is, I mean, the concession stands that are around the ground, will any of those be open for the game, or is that not within the remit of what's allowed at the moment?
No, the glorious burger vans will be available, so it's all outside. But some of the tea bars actually will be shut. We did look at the cost of opening the tea bar, actually, you then have to steward the tea bar, and so the margin, you actually can lose a bit more money by having tea bars open. So there will be the catering vans outside, so you can get a burger, a hot dog, some chips, and a hot drink from them. But it's not going to be everywhere; won't be as open as usual, and certainly we're not opening the internal bars, and there's no alcohol on sale.
And I guess you've talked about kind of the way in which the club has had to change to manage its finances and be prudent with what it's got and what it spends, especially. I mean, this was before the pandemic. This was the aim to kind of play within our means. Even more important, do you see still, I mean, even if people are coming back, if people are losing money by bringing fans in, do you still see a danger that some of the clubs may not finish this season because they go broke?
Yeah, I think there is that danger. Lots of people, me included, have talked about the peril clubs are in. And just to answer your earlier question completely, I think we can see our way through this season, whatever is thrown at us. We budgeted for that and we're in a fortunate position where I think we can see our way through. I don't believe every club is in that fortunate position. Why haven't we seen clubs go into administration already? The EFL have got a loan facility which is available to clubs, and I'm pretty sure some clubs will be accessing that loan facility. But the loan is just taking on more debt for clubs, and there's going to be a payday at some point. So deferring the real problem of clubs running out of money. I've referred to this Premier League deal as the can being kicked down the road. I heard another chief exec refer to it as kicking a ticking time bomb down the road. And it's getting close to the end of the road. So I think the rugby clubs are in real peril. And the fact that we're now having fans back, the same math that applies to us will apply to a number of other clubs. Bringing fans back would probably cost most clubs, if not all, money.
Ian, it is great to have fans back. Let's get on to some of those fan questions we've got for you now. Nigel says, great to be back at the Abbey. Can you provide clarity on the protocol for standing spectators on Wednesday? I guess fans are probably thinking if they're in seats, there might be a number of seats free around them. So obviously, that's the COVID social distance. What's the case for standing spectators?
With standing spectators, we're really relying on the spectators to self-regulate themselves. We can't determine whether two people are in a family bubble or not, or whether they're on their own. We ask people to congregate, be together in their bubbles and maintain social distancing from others. We have only sold that number of tickets in the terraced areas so that we've limited the number of sales, so there should be space for everyone to have space around them. And we just ask that they do that. I can imagine, I know there's a tendency, a temptation to congregate behind the goal or to get together if we slot in our fifth goal or whatever. So we understand that, but please play the game with us. Be compliant. We're going to be observed at the Mansfield game. We'll be observed for every game this season, but in particular Mansfield, we're under the microscope and we just want fans to observe the rules and stay in their bubbles.
Absolutely. Let's just rattle through these because we're quite tight for time. Graham Appleton on Facebook says, how do season ticket holders get their tickets for Gillingham? Of course, the EFL Trophy game, Ian.
Gillingham, they will go on sale. It's a good point. And actually, I know some people hate that trophy, but
really?
It would really help. Yeah, they do. But it'd be grateful if fans did support us, because that's a game where we can actually earn some revenue. Come along, watch a League One side go out of the cup to us give us some much-needed revenue.
That would be nice. Kev Woolston on Facebook says, question about, talks about social bubbles and season ticket holders. I guess referring a bit to what you were talking about earlier with regards to if people come in social bubbles, it maximises that capacity. How do they go about doing so?
Season ticket holders, we know if they're in a bubble, we've got their addresses and we'll seat them accordingly. So the ticketing system should have worked out. Where are we going to seat people? When people get their ticket, please sit in the seat you've been allocated. It may not be exactly where you thought it was going to be. It'll be roughly in the right area, but that's us working with bubbles. So just sit where you're asked to sit.
And just finally, one more on the text from a mystery man. With such an improvement on the way we're playing on the pitch, does this provide you with the confidence to support this with the commercial approach moving forward?
With the commercial, well, I'm not quite sure what he's getting at there. Are we going to back the team to continue to be successful? Well, within our means, we will.
Yeah, I guess just saying that the, how well we're playing on the pitch is there's a confident we can continue supporting this off the pitch, which is what you just said.
Yeah. The club is, I would say, operating in a really unified, organised way, and I think that's showing both on the pitch and off the pitch. And long may it continue. Our aspiration is to do really well on the pitch, and we're supporting the team everywhere we can.
Ian, just a quick question about the Southend game. Obviously, the controversy surrounding the very late postponement of that game, and the interesting fact that they brought up not just COVID, but they mentioned a plethora of injuries as one of the reasons why it stopped. They then obviously managed to field a COVID turned out all to be negative, and they managed to field a team midweek after that. Has the EFL indicated that they're going to take any action against Southend over the late postponement?
EFL, in every case where there's a postponement, the EFL investigate. That's standard procedure. They've started their investigation, or they are going to do the investigation. I don't know whether they've actually started it yet, but there will be one. And I can't really guess what the outcome of that will be, but it will be investigated.
Okay, thanks.
Ian, thank you very much for coming on. Nigel's got back in touch saying, great that Ian comes on and talks to Cambridge 105 Radio. The user in good hands. So happy fans, Ian. And I'm sure they'll be even happier if they can see the user pick up 3 points on Wednesday evening.
Them and me too.
Ian, thank you so much for coming on. Really appreciate it.
Okay, bye.
Ian Maffer there, Cambridge United Chief Executive, talking to us here live on Cambridge 105 Radio. Looking forward to that Wednesday, Tim.
Yeah. I'm completely distracted by the fact that Morecambe are losing 1-0 to Solihull Moors.
How? We got fans back at the Abbey.
I know, 47. Sorry, I just think it's funny when you see teams like Morecambe losing to non-league sides. But good for Solihull Moors. Of course, there's a vague association with us, having been managed very, very briefly by Richard Money.
Yeah, of course. Well, we know very much what it feels like going out to conference sides, especially.
We do indeed.
Recent years. Any stray Morecambe listeners are cursing.
I was watching the Brackley Tranmere game yesterday, and they came close.
But overall, they're really good news, isn't it?
It's fantastic news. I mean, it's what everyone's been waiting. As Ian said, you know, a number of fans supported very early in the off season to buy season tickets with no guarantee that there'd be any football. And the club is obviously very grateful to them and the number that bought them. Obviously, once they went on sale when it looked like the season's going to start. So, fans get live action football rather than watching it on iFollow, which seems to be. I've watched iFollow a couple of times, and it's worked really well for me. But I know a lot of people have had, patchy problems from time to time. That we did all get a free game for the midweek game last week.
Yeah, it's 20 minutes in.
So
we lost so much of it, forgotten which game it was.
Exactly. So it's great news. It's great news to be back. It'll make a huge difference to the team. And finally, the thing is, I mean, because I've been to the games, and I've been in a really lucky position, and I acknowledge that. And it will be really nice to see fans being able to share in the success of the team, and just hope that it carries on the way it is. They don't come in and start watching United lose. That would be terrible.
Let's hope so. You want, when the user having such a good season, you want fans to be there. The odd occasion I've been there as well, it is really... It's so bad. Obviously not on the pitch, but just not having fans there is so bad. They really do miss them indeed. Thanks to everyone for their questions. Great that you've got in touch. Up next, we'll still be talking Cambridge United, but a slightly different matter.
The Cambridgeshire Football Show on Cambridge 105 Radio.
So it's half-time between Brighton and Liverpool, 0-0 at the moment in the Premier League. Let's now hear from Charlotte Crisp, who is Head of Youth Development at the Abbey. She also manages the girls' pathway from the development centres all the way through to the women's team. Here she is telling us about her role, first of all.
As Head of Youth Development, I oversee all of the boys' programmes regarding the RDC and the goalkeepers. And then as part of my female development role, I oversee the girls' structure, all from GDC at the bottom of our pathway all the way up to our new elite girls scholarship programme, which we run with CRC.
And I'm talking specifically on that girls' programme then. What are the sort of stages? Just lay out the real pathway, if you like, from a young girl in the county just starting at her local village club or town club. How does she then get to the top of your pathway?
Yeah, so at the bottom of our pathway, we have links and good collaborations with the grassroots teams, so which any female player who's interested in football will hopefully play with. That also includes Wildcat Centres if they're really just beginners. So they sit at the bottom of the pathway. And then if they were gifted and talented and wanted an extra professional opportunity or training session, they would then approach us, or we would go and approach them and offer this opportunity to them. So that's what we call our GDC, so our Girls Development Centre. So that's, we offer one professional coaching hour a week at different venues around Cambridgeshire. And that just provides them with an additional coaching session within a professional environment to then potentially go up our pathway. So our next step is then our Girls Elite Centre, which we introduced 2 seasons ago. So the Elite Centre are for girls, again, that are gifted and talented, but we believe they're currently excelling within their age group and could potentially be challenged further. So these girls, they train on a Friday night for slightly longer, so for an hour and 15. And we then play other Elite Centres sort of based nationally, so like Swindon, West Brom, things like that. And then the new program, or the new step we introduced last season, was our new female elite scholarship program. So we linked with CRC, which is Cambridge Regional College, where it's college education joint with the club here. So for 16 to 18 year olds, they represent us as a club, and we play against different colleges again around the country. That then would hopefully, and it has linked into our development women. So any individuals, again, as soon as they turn 16, they can play within the development squad for the women, that we would then hopefully progress them into this, and again have links with Leon, Ben, and within the women's first team. And then the idea with them in the development centre would hopefully move into the women's first team. So that is at the moment how our structure and pathway looks like.
And throughout your time at the club and in this role, have you really sort of cemented that structure, if you like, and made it really clear for young girls so they can look at that pathway and they can see how they become a footballer and they can play for a club like Cambridge United?
Yeah, I think so. It's taken a couple of years. Like I said, we've newly introduced sort of the Elite Centres. This is their third season. And again, the scholarship programme, this is the first year. It's going really well. We've been a great success. With, you know, COVID thrown into the mix, of course, but we're always looking to grow and always looking to, you know, improve the pathway where possible. I would say though that with a female game growing so quickly, that the structures like this are so important, that if an individual does want, you know, to go from a 6-year-old to potentially a 16 or like myself, 24-year-old, there is a pathway that you can follow within one club, where prior to, you know, I'd say in the past 10 years or when I was sort of, let's say 12, there wasn't necessarily that structure. So it's not just good for the players themselves, but also for parents. You know, they have something that they can understand and identify and, you know, cherish or use if that's what they want to support their daughter within.
And how is the women's game growing at that real young age, Charlotte? Because there's a lot of talk, and rightly so, about the inspiring the next generation from the fantastic success of the Lionesses over recent years. Are you really seeing that at that grassroots level, young girls turning up and wanting to play?
Yeah, it's great. Each year we get more and more players interested within our programme. Our programme's always growing, not just because of the new platforms we put in place, but in terms of it, just as an enjoyment factor, and again the opportunities that there are out there, it provides a platform for girls to get involved. So yeah, it's definitely going in the right direction, and I'm doing everything I can to sort of help that along the way.
And what's the aim really for yourself in the role? Is it to try and get I don't know what the structure's like of say a really top club, but for someone quite local in terms of Ipswich, they have an academy set up in the top academy league in the country that play against the likes of your Man City's, Man United, etc. Is there a real aim to try and get Cambridge United having an academy set up? You know, we know the men's game have a academy age group sides pretty much all the way up to the senior side. Is that something, I don't know how long into the future, but something that's an aim for the female setup?
Yeah, it's definitely in the back of my mind, and it's definitely something that I'm fully aware of that we could look to, you know, accomplish. As to how you go about doing that, it's always a challenge. It's never easy. But yeah, we're always looking to grow, and we're always looking to provide new opportunities to better the pathway within the football club. So yeah, it's definitely something we'd look to do in the future. Like you said, when, not quite sure, but again, it's on the horizon.
Good to hear. And of course, yourself, you've been in the shoes of these young girls as well. This is a pathway that you went through as well. Obviously, probably a different one when you were younger, but you've been at the club for a long time.
I have, yeah. So I was at the club, I started, I think I was 12, and I joined the C of E at that time. Again, the pathway was very different back then. To in and fro in to from Cambridge United to other clubs. That was over 10 years ago. And then I'm back with the women's squad and thoroughly loving it, yeah.
And is it nice, obviously, having been in those young girls' shoes to sort of nurture them and watch them grow now?
It is. And even more so, like I said, now with this pathway, because if they want that goal to play for the women's squad, if they want, you know, they come to the game and be like, I want to be like you, we can provide them with that is there, and not necessarily just for us. Like I said, even though they play within our elite squad, they still have the opportunity to play for other teams and other grassroots and other elite setups. So for me, it's all about development and all about trying to help players as an individual, as a person and as a player, achieve the goal that they want to achieve, if that's playing for us women or if that's playing for England, maybe playing for Man City. You know, that's what we're here for. And my role and what I want to achieve is just being able to give that extra professional support to players that, you know, have ambitions.
In regards to the county as a whole, how many centres do you have across Cambridgeshire?
So we have 6 girls development centres that are based across Cambridgeshire and 1 elite centre, which is based in Compton. And then again, our scholarship programme is joint with Cambridge Regional College, so slap bang in the middle of Cambridge.
And has that grown over the years as well? Are those numbers increased from what they were?
Yeah, I think we started off, so I took this position, especially as the girls' role manager, from Megan Todd. So I believe when she first started it up, I think we had like 3 or 4 centres, and that was solely girls' development centre. And then we've increased that to 6, 7, and then the elites and then the scholarship. So it's definitely doubled, if not tripled in size, which is brilliant. We've got over, halfway through this season, almost give or take COVID, we've already got over 200 girls involved, and that's just the development and elites, not counting the scholarship programme. So it's definitely, you know, providing the platform for many young female footballers in Cambridgeshire.
And it seems to be paying off at the top end as well, because speaking to yourself, speaking to Ben Yeomans, the manager of Cambridge United Women, the standard of the trials this year in the summer were fantastic.
Yeah, I've been at the club, the women's side now for, I think it's 3, nearly 4 years. And the trials that we always take part in and help out with have always been good. There's never not, you know, it's not been so much so that we don't find anyone that's got potential. But this year, notably, not just the amount of girls that were interested and wanted to, you know, join our setup, the quality was sensational. And again, it was a range of ages. So it's from those girls that potentially are looking to join next year. So we had sort of just newly 16-year-olds up to, you know, 20 plus. So the ones that have got experience and have joined this year, so like Sam, Laura, which have been great additions to the first team squad.
And we'll come on to Cambridge United Women in just a bit, but just finally on the girls, what sort of age do you feel then in your role overseeing it? Do you feel is the real crucial age for young girls that they develop the most and you really see their potential and their growth as footballers?
Oh, that's a good question. I think everyone's different at the moment. Obviously, for me, the younger the better, because you can have more of an influence early on in a player's career. But I would probably say in around sort of the 11, 12-year-olds, where it's not just technical ability, it's, for me, attitude and behaviours is just as important. What do they want to achieve? Do they want to develop? Do they have the drive, the ambition? Where do they want to go? And that's where we can also identify where they might sit within our programme, whether it's development, where it might just be, oh, I want to concentrate on developing your technical ability, or if, you know, they have that proper drive and ambition to maybe sit within the elite programme where we'll challenge them more maybe tactically. So the younger the better, but again, if they show potential, I would say any age. There isn't an individual that I've ever met who's, you know, attitude-wise, not want to learn, whether that's grassroots or like we're not within our setup or within the setup. Again, I think it's just important that they understand what they want to try and achieve. And obviously the younger they are, they want to aspire to like the Lucy Bronzes, Steph Hortons, which is brilliant because, you know, there's so many female role models out there now compared to potentially what there were. Again, I think that's helpful due to the media, the fact that the women's game is now on TV. It's so much more accessible compared to when I was younger. It's getting there. It's getting there.
And how important is it to have more people like yourself in the women's game as well, coaching? Because it must be so much more beneficial to young girls taking up the sport to have role models and female role models in particular like yourself.
Yeah, it's always quite a daunting, knowing when you have individuals that come up to you, you know, you have your role model sheet who you aspire to be to, and they say, you know, someone like me, or it might be another player within the team. So like Emma Jenkins or Kayleigh Ann Burt, which it's a privilege, but it is great to see. Because again, it's so much more accessible compared to what it was. We're based at St Neots now, so we've got a fantastic football ground that we can now allow, or hopefully, COVID dependent, allow spectators to still come in and watch. But especially in terms of the development of female coaching, I think still needs to be worked upon, because having the sort of female coaching behind the female program, again, like you said, it's just so important to have that female figure for girls to aspire to, whether that's if the coach might be a footballer or not. But yeah, it's getting there. But I'm just glad to be a part of it.
Yeah, it just feels so important for those young girls to have, like you say, someone, a female who they can relate to, identify with as they grow up and develop, just as footballers, but as human beings throughout their younger years. On Cambridge United Women then, I think it's Sunday the 13th is probably the easiest way of saying it. You get back underway. Away to Leyton Orient, you must be really, really excited.
Yeah, we're buzzing to get back. Again, it's another lockdown period that we've kept ourselves busy. We've kept all to each other. We've done a couple of things, you know, on Zoom, which has been good fun. But we can't wait to get back out there. We've got training that starts next week, obviously with lockdown finishing, and the hard work gets put in for the next 2 weeks, ready for that Leyton Orient game, where hopefully we can continue our good form against Kent.
And not a lot of action then before you break up for Christmas again, so it's short, sharp burst to try and really hit the ground running.
It is again really important to go into those couple of games that we have got and get, you know, not just some points hopefully, but a good performance, some good performances. But you know, we'll take each game as it comes and hopefully, you know, find ourselves climbing up the table.
Hopefully so. Charlotte, thanks very much for joining me. Really appreciate it. All the best when you get back underway in regards to on the pitch over the next few weeks, and of course with the girls programme as well in the future.
No worries. Thanks, Ollie.
The Cambridgeshire Football Show on Cambridge 105 Radio.